Marvel's Daredevil Season 2, Episode 1, bang, is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps, the Daredevil podcast. It has returned. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler. I am joined here by my fellow avocado at law, my friend in podcasting, and honestly, one of the best dancers I know, Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Woo! Avocados at law, back in action! Yes, I am a phenomenal dancer. This is accurate.
I don't know if I would go phenomenal, but prolific. Prolific
yes.
Dancer.
Yeah. I certainly give it my all and do it very often. Whether or not it's phenomenal is a whole other option for debate right there.
I give it my all and I do it very often. Out of context is an interesting quote. But here we are, Kevin, hopefully filled with several interesting quotes as we open up our journey back into Hell's Kitchen. We are, if you guys are just listening to us for the very first time, Kevin and I, we have podcasted about all of the Marvel Netflix shows thus far. We podcasted about every single episode of the first season of Daredevil. We podcasted about every single episode of Jessica Jones. Kevin has joined us on post-show recaps several times in the past to talk about other comic book shows, other superhero stories. We are big fans of Daredevil, love this show, very excited to get back into it. We tried to record a preview show. I was actually staying at Kevin's apartment in Los Angeles for a few nights earlier this week, or last week as you're listening to this. It did not happen. We had a lot of fun. It was a fun time.
Yes, we did.
But too much fun, not enough podcasting, so we are just starting this thing off. We're going straight into it here with the first episode recap. Hope that's okay with everybody. Hope that's okay with you, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't, you know, we tried, but LA is very hilly, and walking around is not our forte.
No,
so.
Our will forte. Yeah, we failed this city. We failed this podcast, but we're here. We are going to talk about everything that's going on in Daredevil Season 2, and just to set up for you guys how we're going to do it, Kevin is a full-time working man with a full-time working job. We record these things on the weekends when he is free, so we are going to binge record 5 episodes of Daredevil podcasting this weekend and release them over the course of 1 per day throughout the week. That will go across the next 2.5 weeks as we use a weekday to talk about every single episode of Daredevil. So that should have us wrapping up about, let's pull up the calendar here. We will be wrapped with these podcasts, I would say, on April 6th. That will be the season finale of our Daredevil talk. We know a bunch of you guys are going to be binging through this show. We have come to accept and embrace the binging Billies out there. The binging Brendans. The binging Billy Club. You guys are, you're all welcome here. You guys can mock us and laugh at us as we make horrible predictions about what's going to be coming up on Daredevil, and you already know all the answers. But this is just the fun way for us to do the podcasting. I think it's the easiest way to go.
I definitely think I have a prediction that's going to happen. Punisher's going to shoot a lot of people.
Yeah, I think Punisher's going to kill some people. Yeah. What's the body count going to be? Maybe that's the prediction.
I feel like I've lost track already in the first episode. There was at least, 6 or 7?
Uh-huh.
So I can't, and that's episode 1. I can't, like, I by that count, we might end up to the 50 by the end of this season.
I feel like 50 might be light. I feel like he's going trip didge. He could even go 4 didge.
Oh gosh.
But yeah, he is a one man army with a war against a whole bunch of people that are probably bad guys, but maybe don't deserve to be so ruthlessly taken down. I don't know. That's going to be the debate that rages on this season, I think. We should start digging into this. Before we start digging into the episode itself, let's do a little bit of preview. Let's do a little bit of setup. We are leaving the days of the Kingpin are behind us. Wilson Fisk, he is behind bars when Daredevil Season 2 begins. We have no sign of Vincent D'Onofrio on the show. I think that this is a Kingpin-free season, unless there's going to be some surprise appearance later on. How do you feel about moving past the Kingpin era?
On one hand, like, I would love to see Vincent D'Onofrio back as Kingpin. I'd like to see Kingpin again. I mean, I think it'd be great in some capacity. Not necessarily walk in the streets, maybe see him in prison or something.
Like some Hannibal Lecter thing going on.
Yeah, I will say I do like that he did come up in this episode in a logical way where it's like, it's not like, and then we never spoke of him again. Here's these other mobs that no one ever spoke of. It's like, oh no, they were there. He came in, knocked him out of power, and now it's like, now is our chance, you know? So I like that.
I love that your roommate has made an appearance this early into the podcast.
I mean, he should. Yeah. He's a you know, honorary member of this podcast.
Yes, he is.
I like that he still has a presence right now. It's just episode 1, but I like that his presence is still felt, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how they top that this season. We both agreed that Kingpin was just one of the greatest villains we had seen in any of the Marvel movies, let alone the shows. I think that what they're trying to do is they're going to escalate this season by making this the season of the Punisher. Frank Castle, played by Jon Bernthal of The Walking Dead. He is a guy that is coming here to mess stuff up. I think that this is the fourth live action iteration of this character. Dolph Lundgren kicked it off back in the 80s. Tom Jane did his thing. I know a lot of people were down on that movie, but I actually kind of loved the Tom Jane Punisher movie.
Tom Jane Punisher, for me, it's like, I don't think it's a good movie, but it's a fun movie to watch. Like, it's a movie where I've enjoyed watching it, and I think back on certain scenes, and they make me laugh.
The whole sequence with the Russian is still so good.
Yeah, the whole sequence with the Russian is great, and there's, like, great moments with, like, his apartment mates, you know, not wanting to, like, give him up, I thought was really nice. But then there's little things, like, I love the scene, and it's ridiculous, where he rigs that explosive and he puts it in the son's hand. So the moment his hand falls, like, it explodes.
Right.
And that was, like, on the maybe 15th story of this building. And he goes all the way down and he's walking out the door of the building. So he's outside and you just hear a, "No!" And then it explodes. Meaning that guy yelled so loud, it went all the way down to where we heard it on the ground floor. But it's fantastic. And then, of course, the skull explosion in the car factory. Like, it's just, it's absurd, but I love the absurdity.
I love the John Travolta character in that movie.
Oh my God.
So much. I love him because he is such a weenus. Like, he is just like a grade A weenus, and they don't really even try to, like, make him that much of a badass. Obviously, he has power. I think, what was his name? Howard Saint? I think,
yeah, something like that.
That's the name of the character.
Well, he's supposed to become Jigsaw. I mean, that was the whole shtick for the follow-up, right?
Is that how they were going to do it? That was what the plan was?
Yeah, I believe the plan was that he was supposed to become Jigsaw. Like, he survived the explosion, but he's all messed up, and then he's Jigsaw.
Oh, well, that would have been terrible. That would have been awful.
It would have followed suit for where we were going with these films.
Oh, it would have been really terrible. It's so much better if he's just, like, whimpering as he is dragged off into multiple car explosions and just dies like a total weenus.
After killing his best friend, killing his wife.
Oh, man. So, I mean, sorry for spoiling the Tom Jane Punisher movie for you guys if you haven't seen it.
You got a 20-year statute of limitation.
It has not been 20 years since that movie. No chance. Zero chance. It has to have been, like, only like 13, 14 years. I refuse to believe. I cannot believe, man. 20 years.
I'm maybe not 20. I'm given 15.
Okay. All right. Well, you can look that up while I filibuster. But what I would say is, if you have not seen the Tom Jane Punisher movie, it might be worth a second look because it's not so bad. Then there's Punisher Warzone. Ray Stevenson, who is actually in the Marvel movies still.
He's everywhere.
Who does he play? He's one of the Warriors Three, right?
Yeah. He's the, oh gosh, what is his name? The big one.
He's the big guy. Is it? I don't know. I know there's Fandral. I don't know who the other two are off the top of my head.
Oh, God. I can't believe I'm blanking on this. I love those guys. All right, the Warriors 3 is so much fun.
You'll get it. Volstagg?
Volstagg. Thank you. 2004. So, okay.
All right. Good. All right. 2004 on Tom Jane Punisher. I can live with that. I can accept that. Any later than that, I would have been really worried about my health. but yeah, so the Ray Stevenson Punisher Warzone, I think a lot of people are, or I don't know if a lot of people, but I think of the Punisher movies, a lot of people think that one's the best. Not my favorite. I think gratuitously violent, over the top violent, and I just don't care for Ray Stevenson as the Punisher at all. I think,
sure, but there's a scene where a dude is doing parkour, flips up in the air, and then is shot with a rocket launcher.
That was pretty neat. That was pretty neat.
I feel like that scene sets exactly what you should be expecting when you go watch this movie. So, like, if you've never seen this movie, from that scene, that's what you're getting in for.
And this is the movie with Jigsaw. Jigsaw is in this one, and it is not a sequel to the Tom Jane Punisher. It's a completely different thing, and it's Dominic West playing Jigsaw and kind of doing, like, his own, like, Joker with the Jigsaw character, I feel like. It's a very strange performance coming from that guy, but I kind of love it. He's the highlight of the movie for me. But the point being, they've tried to do Punisher a bunch. They have, you know, whether or not you like those movies, they have failed. No franchises were launched out of these movies. Every single one of these Punisher movies were standalone properties. Now we are doing the Punisher thing again a bit differently by making him an antagonistic figure. figure in Daredevil season 2. Do you like that choice? Do you think that this is the right way to try again with Punisher rather than trying to do his own TV show or his own movie?
Yes, this is the only this is the only way Punisher works for me, is being the bad guy and the antagonist in this world. I've kind of expressed to you personally that I am not the biggest fan of Punisher.
Right.
And this is the only way I think I would have been okay with it. I mean, we'll see how it goes, but he's just a character that I know he resonates with people, but like, especially as I've gotten older, I feel like I've gotten more and more away from liking the Punisher as a hero.
Right.
I think as a character, he's fine. As a bad guy, he's fine. As like a psychotic vigilante, he's fine. But every time they're just like, he's a hero, I'm like, nope, no, he ain't. Like, it's just this weird thing that I feel like, I don't know. Do you want me to talk real quick about why I don't like the Punisher?
Yes, I would love to hear this. I think that it's really important because the Punisher is going to be a main character on this show, and I think we need to establish why you're not a huge fan to begin with of the character, and let's see if the show can change your mind at all.
Sure. I mean, personally, it kind of comes down to, like, there's something so quintessentially of the time for him. Like, he is of the late 80s, early 90s, where that, like, anti-hero vigilante who doesn't care about using guns.
The Death Wish type of thing.
Yeah, right? Like, he is of that era where it was just this overextension of machismo, almost, of just, you know, gun-toting, shooting people. He doesn't care about killing, you know, the bad guy. And it's just of that time. It's very, very, very 90s. Like, you know, you think Punisher, too. You think, like, giant guns and pouches. And that is... So many pouches. You know, like, it's him and Cable. Those are the 90s to me.
He can't compete with Cable's pouches.
No. Cable wins when it comes to pouches.
Nobody
which I
can.
Hope there are so many of them in Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
So in that regard, like, I just never got behind that. Because to me, and, like, it's of the time, but, like, in present day... He's a lunatic, and especially now as I got older, he just kind of represents this really, like, hardcore gun-toting mentality that, especially in my opinion, in today's society and what's been going on, I don't think is great. It's not the right thing. I think him being a bad guy makes more sense because he's going around shooting people. I mean, in this first episode, I think they treated him the way they're supposed to, where he's chasing a guy in a hospital and shooting willy-nilly, and he could have shot
someone. Not willy-nilly!
He could have, yeah, willy-nilly's dead.
No, no, willy-nilly, that's binging Billy's brother.
It's what he gets for not being at home binging.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah, the Nilly family is so disappointed today.
Willy-nilly and Billy-nilly.
Yes.
These parents were jerks.
They were bad parents.
But yeah, it's like he doesn't care about the innocent people around, you know, like that type of like just being a bad guy essentially is how I think he works. He's just... You know, how can you go around and, like, he's just murdering people left and right, and you're just like, yeah, he's a hero. It's just this weird thing for me. Like, I know people love the anti-hero. People like the type who just walk on the other side of the law, but there's a Punisher, and then there's someone like Batman. There's a slight difference between them.
Or
I feel like the difference is important.
In this case, there's Punisher and someone like Daredevil. And I think that, you know, we've talked about it before, how there's similarities between Daredevil and Batman.
I got this opening sequence.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's at least one just explicit Batman Begins call out here that I think would have gone over most people's heads, but I put it down in my notes. I was like, okay, we're going to have to talk about that. And then there's, you know, that kind of thing that was present throughout season one of the show. It's certainly on our mind here, and I think that is the question, you know, like, how do you escalate beyond Batman? That seems like a very difficult premise to get your head around and still be a hero, and I think that has been the question with Punisher in the past in a lot of stories, and I agree that I think that the best Punisher stories treat Frank Castle as a damaged individual, somebody with, you know, no small share of PTSD and trauma that he's gone through and how that's broken him. I think that there are ways to tell that story compellingly and in an intensely entertaining way, even in a darkly comedic way. I think the Garth Ennis Punisher stories are, if you guys haven't read those, the Marvel Knights ones he's done, the Max books that he's done, which are kind of Marvel's hard R comic books. Garth Ennis has had prolific runs on Punisher that have been a little hit or miss for me in in certain cases, but sometimes when he's on, he can make that stuff so twisted and funny that I just cannot help but crack up at how he writes Frank Castle. So I think that there are ways to make that character amusing and engaging, but he should always make you feel uncomfortable. And I think at best, you know, he should make you feel uncomfortable, and at worst, you should be like downright disgusted with what he's doing. And I think that that's what makes him compelling. I think that's what makes him fascinating. I think it takes the concept of vigilanteism to a really, really, really dark level that you should not be cozy with. And if the show can nail that and contrast that with a guy like Daredevil, who is really trying to do some good by throwing people away and locking away the key and, you know, giving them a chance to rehabilitate themselves at some point in the future, or at least throw them through the justice system, I think if they can really, you know, make that tug of war tense and interesting, I think this is going to be a really great season. But I'm with you. If it's just like Frank Castle is a great superhero and we love this guy, I think it's going to be a little bit hard to watch. But the casting is great. John Bernthal is such a good actor that I feel like we are in good hands, at least in terms of the performance, and hopefully the writing could measure up as well.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like, he's a great actor. I already think he's doing a great job, even though we didn't get much from him in this episode. I will say, I think you hit on something that's kind of important, very important. I think writing-wise, the thing to explore this season is the Punisher versus Daredevil ethically, almost, and, like, as a dark reflection. Like, you know, they talk about in writing, right? Your bad guy is only as good as a hero, but the bad guy usually is an extension or a reflection of parts of the hero's personality. Like, infamously, they say that Batman's rogues gallery, each one is like a segment of what he could be. Like, you know, his detective side is found in, like, you know, or his way of planning can be found in Ra's al Ghul. His chaotic, you know, almost psychotic side is the Joker. I mean, you can see it in Superman, actually, I can do probably a billion times better off the top of my cup, where Lex Luthor is the worst of Superman's human side. Like, right. The worst of humanity is represented in Lex Luthor. The worst of the alien side is represented in Brainiac. You have someone who, like, Mixius Pitlick, who is a god, and that's, like, his godly powers. Like, the bad guy...
Impressed that you pronounce that so easily.
Do you know who I am?
Yes. Mitzel Pitlick.
Yeah, so with this, you know, jumping to Daredevil, I think a great approach is showing what the first season was really about, and it's whether or not he's going to kill Wilson Fisk, and he chooses not to. And then in the second season, you're seeing this is what he could have become if he had made one choice. Like, this, in my opinion, like, there's a way, not I think it's the whole thing, but definitely to explore that, where you have a vigilante who's going around killing people, and it's like, you had that choice. You could have become this. So I think that's an interesting thing to explore. And we know Elektra's eventually showing up, and that could be, like, his ninja side, where you have
right. This
side is his vigilante side. The other side would be his, like, mystical ninja side. So it'll be definitely interesting to see how they play with that, because I think that's how you make, you know, bad guys work really well.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean...
The Riddler was his detective side. Sorry, I'm trying to let that think in my head, where I'm like, there's someone who was a detective. Oh, Riddler, right, obviously. Yeah. Anyway.
Mr. Freeze is his cold side.
Yeah, it's his cold, heartless side, like, uh-huh. You know, and yeah, there's a lot of things there with Batman.
Poison Ivy is a reflection of the time that Bruce Wayne was a child and just got covered in Poison Ivy.
Yeah, his fear of Poison Ivy.
Yeah, he just had, like, a really, really rough time.
Catwoman is his, you know, time when he, like, loves pets, he loves animals.
I prefer bats! You briefly touched on Elektra. Elektra is a character that is going to be on the show. Not Jennifer Garner this time.
No, not Jennifer Garner. So sad.
So sad. It's going to be Elektra's going to be played by an actress named Elodie Young, who I'm not super familiar with her work. She was Jinx in G.I. Joe Retaliation, which was supposed to be the good G.I. Joe movie. I think it's kind of shitty.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? I think you just can't make good G.I. Joe movies. That might be the case. The animated movie is where it's at. Yeah. But that's what she's from. So she has some ninja experience in her past already, having played Jinx. She's going to be back here. She's going to be premiering here in season 2 at some point. She's not in this episode, so I don't think we need to spend too much time setting up Elektra yet. But just maybe some baseline thoughts. What are your thoughts on Elektra? Can you set up who the character is for people who aren't necessarily familiar with her yet?
Sure. I think we talked about it a little bit in our season 1 podcast, because they made a brief mention of what we assume to be Elektra in the episode 10, Foggy versus
yeah.
Nelson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was when they Foggy beat Nelson.
Modic, yeah.
Dawn of Justice.
Yeah. But Elektra was a former classmate of Matt Murdock's in college. They had a romance, but she actually is a ninja and part of the Hand organization, which we saw in season one where he was fighting, I can't remember the character's name right now.
The guy from the Hand.
Yes, the guy from the Hand. But he fought him in episode 11, I think, which was a brutal, violent one. Oh, nine, never mind. Episode 9, brutal, violent fight. But she is a member of that organization. They have a past and romance together. And some other stuff happens I don't want to really spoil because I don't know if they're going to go that route eventually or what. But, yeah, there's definitely a lot of history between these two.
Anything else you want to set up before we start diving into Bang specifically?
Nothing setup wise. I think we can really go, once we go into, maybe some will pop up to be like, oh yeah, but, I'm ready to delve in, especially with the beginning, which we can discuss.
All right. We'll discuss it. The first scene of the season is Daredevil. He's, you know, full costume. My thoughts on the costume were well established in the season finale podcast that we did last year. Here we see Matt Murdock. He is full fledged Daredevil. He is chasing some people down. He seems to be pretty pumped about it. You know, the whole sequence ends with him on the rooftop smiling to himself like, yeah, this is good. This whole being the devil of Hell's Kitchen thing is really working out for me. Did you have an issue with this scene?
No issue. I'm just like, so Batman, like just the opening sequence, just seeing the like skyline, seeing him like from the back. And then like he hears the sound of the gunshots. And then there's a scene where he pulls someone into an alley, beats them up, and you just see the shadows on the wall. And I'm like, yeah. Batman. Like, there's a lot about it. Like, where the person, you know, the cops burst in and there's just a person on the floor and the hostage left. There's a lot of Batmaning happening right there.
A decent amount of Batmanage for sure. I really like how he just, like, shows up and you just see his hand just, like, show up and pop the guy into the windshield. Like,
yes.
It's just, like, a really quick takedown.
Call an ambulance.
Yeah, that's his first line of the season.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. I have in my notes, he's systematically stopping the robbers. He slams one into a windshield, in parentheses, LOL. He stops others in the kitchen where the chefs join in, and in parentheses, also LOL. Because I just thought, I was just cracking up throughout this scene of just like, wow, what a badass this guy is. And
yeah,
I just loved
great.
How they were presenting it, too, where you didn't even need to see every single, you know, punch land to see how he's taking out these guys.
Yeah, and I do love the ending where you see him smile, because that really just ties into what his personality is like, and kind of established in the first season that he actually enjoys this. He enjoys doing this, so we definitely see that moment there for sure, kind of solidifying that, yep. And then just his conversation with Foggy later, he's clearly having a blast.
He's having a good time. He's doing well, and I think that, you know, probably a big piece of it is public opinion seems to be mostly on his side.
Yeah, no, I mean, people are, like, ranting in a good way, it seems, about the devil of Hell's Kitchen, while the bad guys are just kind of like, ah, the devil!
Yeah, you know? Shaking their fists, as bad guys are wont to do.
Yes.
Before we get into the next scene, I just want to take 1 second and be like, I missed these titles. I love the opening credit sequence for Daredevil so much. And also, I mean, when you look at it, the cast list this season is short. Did you notice that?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. They had very few names before going just right into the creative side and the crew side.
Yeah, it was sad to see. I mean, I'm excited for the season and everything, but it just really makes you realize how much, like, we miss Ben Urich. He's gone. Fisk is gone. Fisk's little buddy Wesley is gone.
Wesley,
no, we hardly knew you. You know, there's just, like, so many people. Willy Nilly is no longer in the opening.
Yeah,
right?
So, he got died in this episode.
Yeah, they couldn't even put him in there. Yeah. But I like that. I think that there's, you know, it's exciting to see how this is going to open up, and I imagine that they will beef up that opening credits when more characters are pouring in. Like, I would be surprised if Elodie Young is not in the opening credits whenever Elektra shows up. But for now, it's a small crew. It's just Charlie Cox. It's just Deborah Ann Woll. It's Eldon Hansen and John Bernthal, and that's it.
Yep. Well, those are the big four for this episode, especially.
For sure.
Except one of them only shows up briefly at the end.
Very, very briefly, but his handiwork is seen throughout.
Yes, it is, yes.
So talk me through the Matt and Foggy scene. They're talking. Foggy, he's been hanging out with what he calls a very limber barista named Bethany, who it is not going to, they're not going to be moving forward. She hugs him like he's her cousin. That's always awkward.
Yeah, I was watching this scene. By the way, I love this scene. Like, just their interactions are so great. I love seeing these these friends. It's like them back in that, you know, back in that flashback to when they were in college together. Yeah. The bromance is real. Moggy is real.
It is. It is. Yeah.
And I was thinking in my head, I was like, yeah, if this was Josh and I, the Avocados of Law, who would we be? And I'm like, we're both Foggy. We're both Foggy. Like, as much as I would be like, I'd love to be Matt Murdock, nah, there's no way. We're both Foggy.
I appreciate the you embracing the reality of our situation.
Yeah, for sure.
There is a version of Kevin Mahadeo that would have sworn up and down that he was Charlie Cox.
Yeah, I wish. But yeah, no, there was a version of me in the long past that was clearly delusional about things.
Yeah. But no, there, you know, and everything is going well. This is where we're finding out that Foggy is like a killer dancer. He's like, oh, I need a wingman, Nelson and Murdock on the dance floor. So
he's too busy. Yeah. He's got so many other things going on right now, though.
He's got other things going on, and those other things start leaking into this conversation in a very real way, where Matt's got blood just trickling down the base of his skull.
Yeah.
How does he not notice that is happening? Like, aren't his senses so acutely tuned that he should notice that there's blood dripping down his head?
He probably does, but at the same time, he is also a blind guy walking down the street in New York. Maybe it's a thing where, you know, it would be too obvious if he just stopped and started wiping up blood from the back of his neck himself.
Right.
And, you know, it's just also a great scene between the two of them. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, just lines of just like, what about us? I don't want to lose you. And I'm just kind of like, Oh my God. Like, there's a shipping happening here that I'm sure people are losing their mind over.
Of course. Yeah. I think the Moggy fans are very happy.
Yeah.
About that.
And, you know, like, yeah, the wiping up the blood scene. And, you know, I love that they go back to talking about the fact that Foggy isn't thrilled about Matt's decision here, but he's kind of like, all right, I guess this is what it is. You know, I'm not happy about it. I'm going to express my unhappiness. But, you know, here we are.
No, it's good. I like it. I think I think that this is cool. I like that they're exploring this, you know, tension in their relationship, where Foggy found out about Matt being Daredevil last season. He was really unhappy about it at the time. There's a bit of coming back together towards the end of season one. Here we see them. They're totally friends again. They're totally cool. They're totally open with each other. But Foggy is making it very clear that he is not a fan of the Daredevil stuff still. And he's basically saying, Matt, you do not have to do this. In fact, if you continue doing this, like if you get caught, at the very best, our best case scenario is that we're going to get disbarred, or you're going to get disbarred, and then I don't want to continue on my own. So he's laying out all these reasons why, on the professional level, they should probably stay away from the Daredevil thing. But on a personal level, too, he's just like, I don't want to keep wiping blood off the base of your skull. You know, I don't want that to be the situation that we have ourselves in. But this isn't coming at the expense of, like, any sort of major lecture, you know, and it's not at the expense of some sort of blowout fight between the two. There's some sense of the fact that Foggy's a little bit resigned to the inevitability of what Matt is doing. And I really like that. I like the way that they explore Foggy's connection to Daredevil in this episode, at least. I think it's a really good setup for where the show can go this season.
Yeah, I mean, like, we talked about, you know, Nelson v. Murdock kind of being like a breakup. Like, we see it almost like, you know, we see there how they got together. We see that they broke up. They had a huge fight. They split. They got back together near the end. Things weren't great. Things were a little bit rocky. But now time has passed, and it's like their relationship is back together again. They sort of like, you know, when you have a big fight with your significant other, but then later on you look back and it's like, well, I'm not still happy about that, but it's fine, you know, there's other things. We care about each other too much to be focused on that one thing. So I guess that's where it is. It's sad that the one thing for these two is that you dress up in a costume and go beat up people and possibly can get yourself killed.
Right.
Here we are.
Yeah. that's where we are. What are you going to do? I also liked this scene where Matt is trying to explain why he continues to be Daredevil, because he basically outlines a scenario where Tony Almeida was a wife beater. Did you catch this? He's talking about Mr. Almeida, who was...
No, because I don't want to see Tony Almeida in that light, like I didn't want to see him in the light they painted him in the later seasons.
No, it's good. It was
no.
It was a good direction. It was a good season. And I say this as the number one Tony fanboy. I love that season. It was a dark direction that they took him in, but I feel like it was cool. But yeah, there's a 24 reference if you guys are lost right now in the fog or the Foggy Nelson of it. It's I just just thought that was funny how he's talking about Mr. Almeida. And I had to beat up Mr. Almeida. And I just kept thinking about Charlie Cox versus Carlos Bernard. And I'm like, as much as I love Tony Almeida, that dude has no shot against Daredevil.
No, not even close.
No chance. Not even a little bit of a chance. I do recall that on Tony Almeida's bio, he used to be a Krav Maga expert. We never got to see those skills in action. There was supposed to be a hallway fight scene between him and Jack Bauer in season 2 of 24 that never came to pass because Carlos Bernard broke his ankle playing basketball, and so they had to write that into the show, and so Jack just pushes him into a wall, and he breaks his ankle.
Man, is that why that scene went the way that did?
Yes, that was supposed to be a big fight scene between Tony and Jack to show that Tony's a badass as well, and instead he just gets pushed into a wall and breaks his ankle like a chump.
That's sad.
That's some unexpected 24 trivia for you here. Things are, you know, basically Nelson and Murdoch is like the equivalent of Tony Almeida getting slammed into a wall and just sheepishly breaking their ankle. Because even though business is booming in terms of clientele, the income flow is not so great unless you can, you know, survive on nothing but bananas and strawberry rhubarb
pie. Yeah, I mean, if the income flow is bananas and strawberries, they have a lot of income.
Yeah, but they're rich. We're rich.
Yeah. But yeah, well, I mean, that's what happens, again, when you accept bananas and strawberries as a form of currency.
Yeah. I love how they, like, take stock of what they've got. Like, well, we've got fruit, pastries, portable electric fans, and each other, so we're doing okay.
Yeah. Happiness.
Very, very happy. I mean, I feel like morale is good in the office, at least, but they've got no money. But that's pretty true to the Nelson and Murdoch thing in the comics, right? I mean, they're not ever really, like, gloriously financially successful.
Oh, no, they're never, like, financially, like, super rich at all. I think they do okay. There was a period where I wasn't reading that I feel like they split apart, and I think Foggy ended up doing really well on his own. But together, I don't think they've ever been like we're in the money, you know, never to that regard. No.
Right. Yeah. I feel like that's just part of the Nelson Murdoch dynamic is like it's the same thing with like, you know, a Superman story. Very rarely, unless it's Death of Superman, are you actually supposed to expect that Superman is going to die and lose. But there will always be things that are thrown his way where it looks like he's not going to make it out, but he's going to be fine at the end of the day. I think that you see that in all sorts of superhero stories. You see that in a ton of heroes' journeys. I think that you got to view Nelson and Murdoch in a similar light, where I think the firm is always going to look like it's in trouble and it's one bad day from being completely shut down, but in the long run, it will probably be fine. This is sort of just status quo for these people.
Yeah, and you know, I'm okay with that. Like you said, it's part of the characters, really. And so, like, yeah, it's the heroes for hire, Luke Cage and Danny Rand, Iron Fist, also fell into the same trap in the comics because they were heroes for hire, but they just never really actually got paid half the time. They just carried
on. Did they at least get bananas and strawberry rhubarb pies?
No, they didn't. They really did not. They usually is just like...
It's bad banana etiquette.
Yeah, it's just a weird bad banana etiquette. This is now we're turning into Survivor territory here. Are you saying James is Luke Cage and needs to learn proper banana etiquette?
I did not say that, but that would be hardcore. And he can't be because he gets injured too often.
Yes, he does. He is very breakable.
Yeah, the very breakable James Clement. We don't need to go too far down that
territory. No, we don't. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm glad this is the way it is. I do think that morale is high, although I think that Karen is not as happy as she's making things out to seem. I think she is the one who's like kind of keeping on to like, yeah, okay, guys, but internally is like, get it together, you know?
Yeah, so where do you think Karen is as we're discovering her in this episode? I mean, she went through so much trauma, went through so much hardship in the first season, ended up killing a guy. Like, she went through it.
Wesley,
no. Went through a ton. She went through a lot in that first season. What's your take on where we're going with Karen based on this first episode?
I mean, they reference a lot of times about how, you know, she's been through rough times. I think both that could be a reference to the stuff with Wesley and the mysterious past that we don't know a whole lot about yet.
Right.
So I think we're going to probably delve into that a little bit more. And I think also Karen is, you know, we see a lot of her old personality coming into play here of like helping people, where she helps that guy who didn't need help. I guess did need help, but you know what I mean? Who was a bad guy, I guess.
Right.
So, you know, we see a lot of that. So I think we're going to see a lot of character growth from her, which would be great. I mean, I think she had a very good character arc in the first season, but she didn't do a whole lot on her, like, on her own, you know what I mean? So I know one of the complaints is especially that the first season of Daredevil did not pass the Bechdel test at all. So we'll have to see how that shakes out.
All right, we'll see how that goes. Irish bloodbath time. this was a crazy, crazy, crazy sequence where the whole, you know, the Irish gangsters, they're getting together. They're like, Wilson Fisk is gone. That gives us some room to do some stuff now. We can take over. The Chinese are gone. The Russians are dead. Yakuza is who knows where. Time for the Irish to take over the city. And this whole time, you just know what's about to come. Like, you know that some Punisher sized shoe is about to drop, and when it drops, it's just going to squash everybody in the room.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now, I was curious how it was going to happen. I mean, I have a guess about how this all shook down, because they were firing wildly and clearly did not hit him, and I'm assuming he set up some sort of Walter White-esque machine gun to shoot everyone.
Yeah.
Like, that's my guess about how it worked.
He's got a gun in the trunk.
Yeah, like, I think he definitely, you know, rigged that machine to, like, start firing at them, which is great. I think that's very smart, because you are one guy against a room full of people
right. With
guns. So, yeah, but that was right there. I'm like, there's a violence that we've come to expect.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, they're doing it sort of slow motion bullet time, so they're really slowing things down so you can see the points of impact for a lot of these people. And you get, like, the one guy who's, like, shot through the throat. Yeah. It's just so nasty. I mean, none of the violence in this scene compares to the nastiness of that guy who just, like, face planted himself into a spike at the end of episode 3 of season 1.
Yeah, but this is episode 1, so we still have time.
But it's giving us, you know, it's a re-entry into the world of just how gory Marvel is willing to go with Daredevil. And if this is, you know, what we're seeing in the first episode, I do agree. I think that we're in for some really, really nasty, gnarly stuff moving forward. But did you like the way that it played out? You thought that this was a cool scene?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a cool scene. It definitely establishes, I guess, to a certain extent, how far the Punisher is willing to go, for reasons that we don't know yet as viewers, so to speak. That's actually something I want to bring up at the end of this episode.
Okay.
I'm curious. But anyway, no, I did enjoy this scene. I thought it was well executed. Haha, pun.
Isher.
Yeah, I did like it, because there was this guy giving the whole speech, and at the end he was clearly about to kill that other guy,
right.
But just had never got the chance.
Yeah, that was great. That's a great touch, where he was about to, like, slam, what was it? He had, like, a bottle or a knife or something. He was just going to beat this guy to death, but the Punisher beat him to the punch.
Yeah, beat him to the shot.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. I liked that a lot. We go to Josie's bar in Hell's Kitchen.
Josie.
Back to Josie's, very happy about this. Apparently, don't drink the water at Josie's. The water is bad, tainted water.
Which is crazy. I mean, New York is supposed to be known to have, like, really good water. But a lot has gone on in that version of New York that has not gone on in our version of New York.
It's got shitari cooties and all of
yeah,
the water.
For sure. Yeah. Just all up in the water.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like shitari cooties could be good.
How?
I don't know. Like, you get, like, some sweet, like, alien cooties. Maybe something awesome can happen there.
Yeah, that's how superheroes are born.
I mean, listen, people
and
get
not
into
how normal people die.
People get into toxic waste accidents in this world, and suddenly can have, like, the most heightened of senses, or they can fly and be basically super powerful,
or turn into big green monsters.
Right? I feel like shitari cooties could turn somebody into a superhero.
That's their next Netflix show after these four.
Marvel shitari cooties.
Coming soon to Netflix. Yes, we can make anything and you will watch it.
Yeah, it might not be very good, but we will make money. but I like that. I thought that was just a fun little note. Karen and Matt. Caredevil, as our
Caredevil,
good friend Albert Vargas would like us to say. Caredevil, is this happening? I mean, Karen and Matt, they're playing pool. She seems to be very tenderly holding his hand. I'm not really figuring out how Matt is feeling about this thing, but it certainly seems like Karen is into Matt, if not the other way around.
Oh, for sure. I think Matt's somewhat feeling it. I think, I mean, this is no surprise from Karen's end. Even in the first season, there were hints about it, sure. In the first season, and it's funny because I was not shipping them at all in the first season, but I thought this scene...
We were firmly Team Lair in the first
season.
Yeah,
for sure, and Team Kagi. But this, I think, is good. I actually really like this. I thought it felt very natural, because some time has passed since we last saw them where things were starting to inkling towards it, and now some time has passed, and so it felt natural to me. It felt like it made sense. I actually liked it. I was like, looks like I'm falling down the Caredevil hole. So
right.
Yeah. So I actually very much liked that scene. It was really funny because Matt did not need any help to play pool.
I know. But I also like how ruthless Karen is, because she doesn't know that.
She does not.
She has no idea that Matt could just like take everybody in that room to town on the pool table, and she's just like totally rocking him. Like, she's advising him on what to do and where to shoot. And are we to believe that she's like tricking him into shooting the eight ball into the corner so that she can win?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So that's, like, such a dirty trick to do against, not just your friend, but your blind friend. It's just such a nasty thing to do.
But it's funny.
Yeah, it is funny. I like that, but I just thought that was a great
character. They were only betting bananas. They're fine.
I know. Well, the banana is a precious commodity for these people. The banana. You laugh, but bananas mean everything in this world.
Yeah, well, that's why she's winning all of them.
Yeah. But yeah, little does she know that that Matt Murdock is Uncle Filling her and is actually secretly a fantastic pool player. Yeah.
The Fresh Prince means everything.
Yeah, he's Uncle Phil sharking her. But I mean, I don't think that she would. I think she would probably freak out if she saw that happen, just as we all did when Philip Banks turned out to be a spectacular pool player.
Well, Philip Banks turned out to be the best everything. He's so wonderful.
R.I.P. Uncle Phil. Alongside Willy Nilly, we shall bury you. We get a great scene here still at Josie's where the lone survivor of the attack on the Irish is here. And at first, you don't know what this guy is doing. Matt notices his heartbeat, notices that he has his finger on the trigger of a gun. And it's like, okay, what's about to happen? Let me try and defuse this thing. And it turns out that he is looking for Murdoch and Nelson. He's trying to figure out what's going on. This is a guy named Grotto. Is he a character from the comics?
This is going to be one of those things where I feel like I'm going to say no, and then someone be like, well, actually, right. An issue, but as far as I know, no, he's not like Turk, as far as I know. Again, I say this, and someone's going to come out of the woodwork.
Hey, someone come out of the woodwork and let us know. We always like to be told when we're wrong. But yeah, he's coming out, and he's saying, like, I'm not a choir boy. I've done some stuff with the Irish mob. I'm not going to lie about it, but I still need to know what the hell just happened. He wants to know. He wants help in figuring out who just hit this army, and he believes he is in some deep doo-doo.
Yeah, I mean, he saw what happened to his other people, because as far as he knows, they got hit by an army as well. Like, you know, like, this was like army on army violence practically. But he doesn't know the truth of the matter, so he of course is concerned and scared, because he's just like, this whoever it was came after all of them, and the moment they know that he's still alive, they're gonna come after him.
Right. So he passes out because he's been shot.
Severe blood loss.
Severe blood loss. It's impressive that he made it this far. But he's kind of he's going to propel us into some action later on in the episode. So Foggy and Matt, they're going to investigate this further. They go to the scene of the crime. It's absolute carnage there. There is
bullet hole.
Yeah, that was a great shot of just the camera like looking through somebody's like torso, this, you know, huge hole that was just punched through this guy's chest, and there's a cop on the other end of it just looking through. That was fantastic camera work. And then look through the body. There's Officer Brett. I love Officer
yes.
Brett.
But they didn't bring him snacks and stuff this time. He didn't bring him Foggy didn't bring him, what was it, cookies from his mom?
Right, yeah. Well, again, this is the thing. It's like when you are only swimming in pastries, you just can't give a pastry to everybody.
That's true. That's true. Things have to change. The world has changed. The economy has changed.
Yeah. But this is, you know, Officer Brett is basically telling them, like, there's, you know, some paramilitary organization here that is, like, roughing people up just like this. And
people up is an understatement. Yeah, but yes.
You do not want to get involved. Hell's Kitchen is about to explode, and little do they know that it is not an organization but a man who is causing all this trouble.
Yeah, they did not realize that until I'll get into that later, but yes, no one realizes that as of yet. what I found interesting and kind of cool is that they did this in the first season, and they kind of brought it back, where they go to talk to Officer Brett, and Foggy's doing the talking on that end to find out information from him, while Matt is listening to everything else to find out other information.
Right, yeah, no, I thought that was good. He overhears that this is exactly what happened to a biker gang last week called the Dogs of Hell, which feels like these characters exist in the Sons of Anarchy universe. Like, they the patches on these guys, like, President, Sergeant at Arms, like, it feels like all of the research that was done into creating these characters was just by watching Sons of Anarchy. Yeah, I feel like that was how they knew what to do with motorcycle culture here.
I know nothing about motorcycle culture in reality, so.
Are you a Sons of Anarchy guy, Kevin?
It's another show that I heard is really great that I never got into. And I love Ron Perlman and I love Katie Sagal. So that's one that I feel like I should be watching because of my love of those actors.
Well, it's over. It's 7 seasons. Yeah. It's done. The quick Sons of Anarchy aside, we podcasted about that here on Post Show Recaps when it was wrapping up its final season. Rob Cesternino and I talked about that. And my final takeaway is I'm glad I stuck with it, but I would probably advise most people to just watch the first 4 seasons and call it. I think that the show has an appropriate ending in season 4, and you could end it there and spare yourself some time and misery instead of proceeding to go through 5, 6, and 7, get really, really difficult to watch. That's neither here nor there, but that's my suggestion to you, Kevin, and anyone else who has not seen Sons of Anarchy and does want to give it a shot, because it was really great in those first 4 seasons.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah. So yeah, I like that, to know, like, you just go here. That's what I tell people for Supernatural, where it's just like, if you're worried about doing all 12 seasons, just do the first 5.
Yeah.
Definitely worth it.
I would stop at 4. Here's the Batman shout out. Matt and Foggy are talking about what to do to figure out what's going on, and Foggy's like, oh, I might know somebody with the Dogs of Hell. I'm going to go figure that out. Matt, what are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to poke around. I'm going to rattle some cages. He just straight up says, rattle the cage, which is classic Batman Begins line.
Yeah, he didn't say it quite in the Christian Bailey way that it needed to be said.
No,
but, you know.
But I don't think that you can have that line on Daredevil without knowing that you just took something from Batman Begins. That has to be intentional.
I mean, every Batman reference that they do is intentional.
It has to be. It has to be.
Yeah.
Rattle the cages. I just thought that was great. All right. And
I'm waiting for him to grab someone when someone else goes missing and just, where is she?
Yeah.
I think he did do that. I think he did that when Claire went missing in the first season.
Yeah, he's done it before.
Yeah.
He's done it before. He's basically Batman.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the way they're taking it. I think there is, you know, noticeable differences between the two, which we talked about in our first season podcast. So people who haven't heard that should go back and listen to it for sure.
He's blind Batman. He's blind Batman.
Yeah, that's the difference. Yeah. He's just blind.
Yeah. But we have Foggy. He's going to go. He's going to go check out on what's going on with his friend Smitty from the Dogs of Hell. They were in 3rd grade together in Sister Hagen's class. Obviously took different career paths. I really like seeing Foggy versus the Sons of Anarchy. I think that that's a fun look.
It was an interesting scene. Like, I mean, kudos to Foggy for having some guts, because every moment of that, I'm just like, oh God, why are you still here? Just leave, just go.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah, but he can't leave. It's adrenaline. It's not courage. It's sheer adrenaline.
I love that.
Keeping him there.
I did love that line. It's just like, it's not courage. It's sheer adrenaline.
Yeah. But he finds that, you know, he basically hears the same thing, that his friend Smitty is dead. R.I.P. Smitty, we will bury you next to Uncle Phil and Willy Nilly. and we find out that, you know, this army had taken out the Dogs of Hell, and we know it's not an army, but they don't know that. So they're really just leaving these little breadcrumbs that we're going to pick up with Frank Castle showing up at the end of the episode. Meanwhile, Matt is chasing down some leads, and we mentioned him earlier, but it's the return of Turk. Turk is back.
Yeah, poor Turk.
Turk got arrested with the whole Fisk shakedown, right?
Yeah, I believe he did. Yeah, he got arrested at the end, and he clearly got out of prison, and he's going to get arrested again, and as he said, he'll clearly be out of prison.
How is he so good at getting out of prison? How does this happen for him?
I don't know. I'm not very good at knowing how the criminal justice system works. I know it doesn't work well,
right.
So there's that.
Yeah. So he's out. That's good, but then he has his hands broken by Daredevil.
Yep.
That was a gnarly move, just slamming the trunk down in his hand.
Yeah, just leaping right onto it, really, and then knocking someone else over.
I mean, Daredevil has kicked a lot of ass in the first season and now in the first episode of season two and presumably later in season two as well. But I gotta say, like, I feel like breaking Turk's hand with the trunk of the car, that's like the meanest thing that I've seen Daredevil do. Like, I don't know if I'm just reacting to that particularly extremely. But I was just like, oh man, that was really cruel. Did you have to do that?
I mean, I think out of all the asses, he kicks Turks the most often. Like, he just continuously does it. So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of, I feel like, somewhat overboard. But Turk's got to learn to stop doing that.
I know. Yeah. It's not good. It's not great. But Turk, who always has his ear to the ground, and I know that you were saying this in the first season podcast, that Turk is, in the comics, he's somewhat of an informant for Daredevil, right?
Yeah, so it's pretty much similar, very similar relationship to what we're seeing right now.
So it's never like Turk is psyched to be giving information to Murdoch. It's always very reluctantly, but he's free with the information when he's cornered.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be a guy who's like, you're never going to get the info out of me. He's like, oh, please don't hurt me, you know?
Right.
Like, so he eventually, yeah, he will spill the info.
All right, so Turk gives him some information that basically points Matt to some people who got some guns, and they're arming up for this war. There's, you know, some people from Juarez that are coming up. Whenever you call in mercenaries from Juarez, you know it's a big deal.
Yes. It's clearly out of my wheelhouse because I don't even know where that is.
but Matt, he goes, he like shows up at like this meat locker thing, and he sees that all of these mercs have been killed and left for dead, hanging on hooks next to all of these huge slabs of beef that did not look very appetizing when juxtaposed with a bunch of hanging corpses. Really, really gross stuff. One of these people is still alive.
Yeah, and how can people like the guy as a hero? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think that, I don't know. I think that's the question that we're going to be asking ourselves throughout the season. I mean, maybe these were really, really bad dudes who totally deserved it.
It's like Arnold Schwarzenegger in True Lies. It's like, have you killed people? Yes, but they were all very bad.
They're all very bad. Yeah. So this one guy is still alive, and he, you know, is like freaking out. And Murdoch says, you know, tell me who they are. And this guy, his final words are, there's no they. It's him.
Yeah.
It's one man.
And then we see the feet walking.
Yeah. Then we see the one man. And oh boy. Now we can really talk about John Bernthal as Frank Castle landing on the show in a pretty epic way. Just shooting up this hospital.
Yep.
All in an attempt to get to this guy, Grotto, who's been checked into the hospital. Karen is with him. She's pretending she's his wife, and that she loves his, you know, his hot Irish temper. I thought that was really funny.
You got to have a character. You got to really delve into the character you're going to play.
She's good. She's good. But he's coming after Grotto, and it's like, it's a scene out of The Terminator, it feels like, you know?
It feels like that, the police scene.
It's, you know, it's the police station scene from the first one. It's, you know, the shootout at the psych ward in the second one. You know, these are scenes that you see in Terminator.
The cemetery in the third one.
Don't talk about the third, fourth, or fifth Terminators. We can talk about the Sarah Connor Chronicles if you'd like. Underrated show. T-Dub would agree. But yeah, we get this crazy scene where Punisher is just shooting the place up. And it's
that's where he takes out willy-nilly, because he just doesn't care.
No, I mean, willy-nilly somehow probably just died of a heart attack. Because none of the stray bullets. Just from the loud noises. None of the R.I.P. willy-nilly. I still feel really bad about that. But all of the stray bullets, it doesn't seem like it connects with anybody. But, like, how do you know that? How do you know that Frank isn't just going to accidentally shoot some employee's face off?
That's my point. I don't think he cares. I mean,
do you think he is? And I think I need clarification on that, because my understanding of Frank Castle is he is taking out the bad guys in the way that he sees as being the most ruthlessly efficient way, putting them down for good, killing them where Matt Murdock is willing to, to incarcerate these people. But does he not care about collateral damage? Does he just accept collateral damage? Is that part of the Punisher's MO? Because that would be foreign to me. Frank Castle really cares about innocent bystanders. But what we're seeing here on the show with the way that he's shooting up the hospital, either he's just like so extraordinarily confident in his ability not to kill anybody on accident, which I guess is not impossible because that's kind of his superpower possibly, or he doesn't care, and that's a different guy than I've been led to believe about the Punisher.
So here's my take on this whole thing is that in the comics, you are correct. He doesn't like killing innocent bystanders because that's his whole shtick. Like his whole thing is that his own innocent bystanders got killed, so to speak. I mean, it's more elaborate. I don't want to spoil it because if, you know, it goes into the show, but right. So he doesn't want to kill innocent people. That's very evident in the comics and, you know, such things. Like he strives not to have collateral damage. Now, in the show, it looks like he was just firing, you know, at them, and it doesn't matter who would have ended up in his way. An argument could be made that he is confident enough in his abilities, and he was just not firing when there were people in his line of sight, so he was firing only when he could have a shot clearly at them. We saw he's a pretty dang good shot when he had the sniper rifle. I think they're trying to make an argument that while he is not the level of Hawkeye, he is a very good shot,
yeah.
And he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Now, that is the way around it. In reality, someone was going to get shot in the face. This is my problem. Part of my problem with the culture of the Punisher is that it's an absurd culture.
Yeah.
That the good guy with a gun will never accidentally shoot someone. And it's like, incorrect. So,
in the way that he was doing it, too, where he's just...
For
like,
sure.
It's like shotgun blasts left
exactly,
and right.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, we'll see how they explore it on the show and what they do, but...
Well, I think it worked. It made me feel really uncomfortable. And I think that that's the point. I think that it's supposed to, you know, it's a great action scene. Like, it's done in a really compelling, excellently choreographed way, but it's also just really unsettling, especially in our current culture, to see a guy just ripping up a public place with a gun. And I don't think that the show wants you to feel any other way. I think the show wants you to feel really unnerved by seeing this guy. I don't think Punisher is being set up as a good guy at all, at least from this scene for me, which I like. I think that's a good way of doing it.
And I certainly hope that's the way they're doing it. I just worry because there are, not worry, but like, it's like I've mentioned before, right? There's the people when we watch Jessica Jones, there's that small group who would be like, Kilgrave talking about like how he was treating her all nice and like blah, blah, blah. And somehow they're just like, you know, thinking like, yeah, Kilgrave was treating her nice. You know, I worry about the people who are going to end up. And again, this is not the fault of the show at all. But there are going to end up people, if he's just like, I'm just a really good shot, I knew I never was going to hit anyone, and he did it, and they're just like, yeah, I'm also a really good shot. Like, you know?
Right.
Like, you have those people who are just disconnected from reality. And there's, as we have discovered lately, a lot of them who are disconnected from reality.
Sure.
And it's dark times in America.
Dark times in America, dark times in Hell's Kitchen. We get the first confrontation between the Punisher and Daredevil at the end of this episode. Just as Frank is about to snipe Grotto, Daredevil shows up. They've got a little bit of a fight. What did you think of the fight?
See, this is my other thing. Now I'm like, going
let it out. Let it out. Just let it ride.
This is my other thing with the Punisher, and especially in this scene, is that, okay, yeah, he was in the military, he was a cop. Daredevil is a superpowered ninja.
Uh-huh.
Why is this a contest? Like, when he has a gun on him, sure, yeah, there's a problem there. But when they're just fist fighting, what? Like, and that's the thing with the Punisher, is that he used to be a much more physically fit and capable, I guess, John McClane, but he was just a dude. He was just a guy who was in the military, who had guns, and was a cop, and now he's some kind of Superman.
Right.
Where he's just like, I will go toe-to-toe with Daredevil. And it's just like, but how? Like, so... It was a cool fight scene. Like, the show was very good at choreographing fight scenes. It was just ridiculous to me because I'm just like, but how?
Well, I think that the point is, like, he's not going to win a fist fight against the Daredevil. I think that he's, you know, he's good enough in hand-to-hand combat that he's going to be serviceable for a while. But if that had lasted, you know, another 30 seconds, he's getting his ass handed to him.
Sure,
Unless he's got a gun nearby because Frank Castle is the guy who is willing to shoot you in the face.
Did he pull out, like, three guns during that fight too, I feel like, because he had the sniper rifle. I felt he pulled out another, and then he pulled out another one at the end.
Yeah, he was armed up. He was turned up. So, you know, he's willing to go there, and if he goes there, if he busts out the guns, then you're in trouble. And I mean, we know that, you know, it's like what we said earlier. Daredevil gets shot in the face, and it's not like he's going to die. He will come out of that. Something will...
I think he's going to get a new face mask, though.
He's going to need one, probably.
Yeah.
You know, something's going to come from that, but still, it's just an exciting moment. moment when Frank Castle pulls a gun on him, says bang, and shoots Daredevil in the face. And that's the way you end your first episode. It's just like, oh,
with a bang.
Shit. That is literally ending your episode with a bang.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really cool moment. I thought that was a great end to the fight that just shows the, you know, Frank Castle's willingness to take things to that level that Murdoch is not willing to go.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You know what? The show did, you know, I'm going to back up a bit. The show did do a great job of that because he wasn't going to win a fist fight. And we did talk about how Daredevil, while being a superpowered ninja, does get beat up a lot because he is still blind.
Yeah.
So, like, he's not, you know, he is very capable. He would have won the fight in the long run. Punisher clearly knew that and had to pull out the gun. But I guess in the comics it's problematic because, like, he'll go against Batman, and it's a problem, and I'm like, come on. Come on.
Right.
Like, Batman would annihilate him. But that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, great bang ending for the first episode. I feel like I can ask right now the question I kind of want to ask our listeners.
Yeah.
So for us, Josh, here's the thing. We watched this episode, and I thought it was really well done. It was well paced. I really liked it. But for us, from moment one, we knew there's no army. We knew it was the Punisher. We knew what was going to be happening. I'm curious for people who are like the non-comic readers or who don't keep up with the news like we do, because we were like reading about the casting. We knew the Punisher would be here. Like, if you're just a normal person watching it, did you know? Like, was it, you know what I mean? Like, did you know from the start, like, oh, it's not one person, it's just, or not an army, it's one guy?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And
I'm just very curious how it played out for someone who is unaware of this stuff. You know?
We had a version of this question from Brendan Fitzpatrick, from Binging Brendan, who said, I really liked the scene in the club with the Irishman, but about 10 seconds in, I went, oh, hey, I bet this is where the Punisher shows up. They're all going to die. And lo and behold, that's what happened. My question is it a bad thing that it was so predictable, or are we just at the point with superhero shows and movies that everything feels a little cliche? And follow-up question, do you think it would have played differently if we hadn't known Punisher was in the season for the last 6+ months. And I think that the answer to that is going to depend on, well, did you know that the Punisher was on the show? Because if you know that the Punisher is on the show, I think that you're going to connect that immediately.
Yeah.
I don't think that there is going to be any question about that. And is it bad that it's predictable? I don't think so. I think it's fun. I think it's like, all right, so clearly the Punisher is about to show up, and it's not like the joy isn't in who's going to mess this thing up, because you have the who down. It's the how and the when and the what is going to be used to take them out, and how is that scene going to manifest? You know that the Punisher is going to wreck shit. You just don't know how. And there's a lot of fun in a reveal like that. But I echo the question that you're asking. Like, if you didn't know that Punisher was going to be in this season, like, if you just knew that Daredevil season 2 is dropping on such and such date, and I have that marked off in my calendar to binge it, and I want to know absolutely nothing about it because I liked the first season, I don't need to be sold on season 2, would you have just been shocked that there was just this one guy, and who the hell is this guy? My guess is that most people probably know that the Punisher is part of this season. Punisher isn't like, you know, he's not Batman level or Superman or Spider-Man level. He's not like a super recognizable, like an instantly recognizable pop culture icon, but he's part of pop culture. I think most people who are familiar enough with Daredevil are probably familiar with Punisher. So my guess is that most people knew that this was just one guy, but I'd be curious to hear from the people who did not have any idea that this was coming. One more question before we close out here. This was something we got from Hannah, who says, unfortunately, I found myself a bit bored during this first episode. Season 1 was just so good. Is it possible that the second just can't live up to the hype? And will I be proven wrong by Punisher and Elektra? So I throw that to you. Were you bored at all during this first episode? Did you notice any sort of slower quality when measured up against the first season of the show? Did you think that this was a quick episode? Did it keep your interest? I know that you were watching it at the end of a long day.
Yeah, no, I mean, I did like this episode. I feel like my issue, and I think I can't speak for Hannah because I don't know if she also was just well aware of what the Punisher's deal was and everything. But as a person who knew what the Punisher is, I'm like, well, yeah, we know it's one guy. So it took a long time to lead up to the it's one guy reveal when you know from the go it's one guy. So in that regard, I can totally understand how a lot of it is slow because it's people investigating to an answer you already know.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. I think for me, I missed the Kingpin so much, and the Kingpin took a while.
Well, he didn't show up until episode like three or four.
He took a while to show up in the main season, but just that energy that he brought, and even just what his presence, you know, what the idea of the Kingpin brought to the show before he even showed up was so large, you know, physically and also story-wise. It was just like such a big story that I think, you know, one of the reasons why Daredevil is so popular is because it had such an awesome first season, and it's a lot to measure up against. And I'm curious to see if season two can do it. You know, second seasons, it's very often that you see the sophomore slump. I'm not worried about a sophomore slump here. I think it's going to be really hard to be better than the first season because the first season was so good that I feel like expecting it to be better than the first season is probably expecting too much. But I think that this was a fun episode. I thought that it was really great to see Daredevil back in action and to see Murdock being, you know, pretty thrilled with his own work. To see him taken down the way that he's taken down at the end of the episode, I'm really curious to see what the ramifications of that are going to be. And just, I think that Jon Bernthal is going to do some interesting stuff with this character. And I like the way that they're using the Punisher so far in an antagonistic way, not in a glorified way. I really think that we're supposed to feel alarmed by this guy. I don't think we're supposed to be rooting for him, at least not yet.
Yeah, no, for sure. Again, I think that's the way to play it. That's the way to do it. I was trying to see, but it was dark. Did he have his skull on him yet?
I didn't see either.
Yeah.
If he did, it was subtle.
I'm excited to see when that show up, because I actually kind of like how from the... I've only seen like one image maybe of it, and that was because of the Netflix pop-up, you know? Because I if I'm in on something, I think I've mentioned this, I try to avoid getting super spoiled on stuff.
Yeah, you don't watch trailers for things that you know that you're going to watch.
Correct. Like, I've only seen the first Cap trailer. I'm just going to watch nothing else. And so, like, I know the skull is there. So I'm excited to actually see it, how it looks on the show. Because it looks like he's wearing a Kevlar vest, and he just painted part of it, and it just happened to look in a skull shape, too, which I think is clever. So we'll see how that shakes out.
We'll see how it all shakes out. So that is it for the first episode of Daredevil Season 2. The next episode is Dogs to a Gunfight. Seems like that'll be heavily featuring the Sons of Anarchy. can't imagine that's going to work out so well for those guys. Let's see if they make it.
No, Punisher dies in episode 2, dude.
that's the twist. So we'll be back tomorrow with our podcast on that one. Hashtag time. Do you want to go RIP willy nilly? Or do you want to go
for willy nilly?
We could do
or
that.
Or Avocados at Law back in action. That's a long one.
That's
though.
A long one. I had Shatari cooties as well down, but I feel like that's hard to spell.
Yeah.
So hashtag RIP willy nilly. We hardly knew ya. But binging Billy is still alive, I'm sure, out there. Hopefully you binging Billies are listening along with what we're going to be doing here on the, I was about to say the Punisher podcasts. It is the Daredevil podcast. I would not say the Punisher podcast.
The Daredevil podcast featuring Punisher.
Yeah, that's another story for another day. Follow Kevin. He's on Twitter at Kev Mahadeo. I'm at Round Howard. We will be back tomorrow with another episode of the Daredevil podcast here on Post Show Recaps. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.
Woo!